C1AN, The Structure of the Christian Science Textbook, Our Way of Life, Chapter 5, Animal Magnetism Unmasked. Number 1A.
Before I start, I want to remind you that tonight they changed the clock in England, and that you can put your hour, 1 hour backward when you go to sleep, so that you don't be too early here. Now, I want to take the whole weekend for the subject of animal magnetism. And I want to devote this afternoon, the whole afternoon, on the history of animal magnetism. Perhaps you may think that it is taking a bit a lot of time just for the history of animal magnetism, but when we go through the text of the chapter Animal Magnetism Uncovered tomorrow, you will find how important and helpful this history on the development of animal magnetism is. And as a matter of fact, it is a wonderful history. I saw it only about a week ago, and I was so thrilled with it that I just couldn't wait until I was in London and sitting before you and tell you that story. It's a grand story showing again that in reality there is a divine order and that everything under the sun is subject and controlled by this wonderful order of the world. So let me first take today the history of animal magnetism or mesmerism, which more or less starts with Dr. Mesmer, who for the first time seemed to have to investigate this so-called power of animal magnetism. And what we will be seeing is the history of power, the history of how power, which has never been seen by the physical senses, how that power has been investigated through the ages, and how one, the human opinion on what this power really is has changed and changed and changed. So we will see a great trend, so to say, of the investigation of material power, then to the unseen forces called magnetism, further to the power of animal magnetism, of the power of imagination, the power of the psyche, psychology, the power of mind with a small m, until finally Mrs. Eddy discovered the power of divine mind with a capital M. Therefore we'll see a long development from physical power to divine mind power. And so I want to start with Dr. Mesmer and his line of thinking, also because I got quite friendly with that man. I was reading a lot about his life and all what he has been doing, and I felt that he has been so misrepresented in the Christian Science movement as a charlatan, as I don't know what, whereas as a matter of fact he was quite a man. Well, he was quite a man, and I want to rehabilitate him today, but I don't want to rehabilitate mesmerism. That's the great difference between the man who is honest and who is searching and who is going along new lines and pioneering on in an unknown field. That's one thing, and the system or the theory which he has established, that's another thing. Mesmer was really the one who had quite a scientific mind and who was trying to find out the scientific nature of his discovery. So let's have a look at Dr. Mesmer, who was born in 1733 in Germany near Konstanz. had a very happy youth. Then he was sent to college. He studied theology for a while. He didn't like it very much, and so he left it and studied philosophy and got the degree of a doctor of philosophy. With that knowledge in his pocket, he went to Austria, to Vienna. He gave private lessons on all sorts of subjects of natural science, like mathematics, geology, physics, and so on. He was quite a learned man to earn his way to study medicine. And after a few years, he got the degree of medicine from the faculty in Austria, in Vienna. He was established there as a doctor in full rights, and the thesis which he wrote already in his youth had a Latin name and was quite indicative of his later work. It was De Planetarium Influxus, that means in English of the influence of the planets. And he treated already in that thesis the influence that the planets, that the sun and the moon and the stars have on vegetable and animal, that is human life. When he got his degree as a doctor, was established as a doctor, he married a quite wealthy widow and got a big house in Vienna with a wonderful big park. And what he did was, because he was a humanitarian to the nth degree all his life, he established there a clinic for the poor people. He turned that wonderful house into a clinic for poor people and treated all the poor people in Vienna. So you see, he was not just a charlatan, you say charlatan, but really he was a humanitarian. He is described as a very keen observer, as an industrious experimenter, as an exceptionally cultured gentleman. That's how he's described in many of his biographies. And he was passionately fond of music, and it is really Mesmer that gave Mozart, the young Mozart, the chances to be introduced to the Empress Maria Theresia in Vienna. He supported also in his later life always the musical genius and composers, and he was a great friend of these musicians. So you see only in these few words that Mesmer was a man who was cultured, broad-minded, who had a scientific outlook, who was not egoistic at all, but his whole aim was to help mankind and the finer arts. Well, he went on practicing. He forgot quite a lot about his thesis he has written, until one day an English baroness appeared at the court in Vienna and was sick. And at the court in Vienna was the court astrologer. He was called Pater Hell. Funny enough, Hell. But Pater Hell was asked by this English lady to furnish a magnet because she had seen in England that cures were be done through magnets. Pater Hell, who was friendly with Dr. Mesmer, told him about it, and Mesmer said, well, there must be something about it, and he produced some wonderful magnets and gave it to Pater Hell and said he would be very interested to know what will happen with that case. And Pater Hell reported very soon afterwards that lady got quickly well after the treatment with these magnets, and that set Mesmer to think. He produced for himself some magnets and began to treat his patients with magnets. With ordinary iron or cobalt magnets. And the funny thing was that his patients all got healed. Now one can understand that if somebody makes a discovery like that, that he's quite fascinated by it and that he's very taken by it and convinced of what he is doing. So, and also one must remember that even that well-honored medical man, Paracelsus, who lived in the 16th century, he already had stated, and Mesmer knew that, Paracelsus already said, I'm convinced from my experiments that the magnet contains mysterious properties of so potent a character that one cannot dispense with in the treatment of disease. And so Mesmer remembered that and set at work to experiment on his patients with magnets. Now, what was his theory? His theory was, he put it like this, though one must remember that naturally as years went on, he altered his theories, but in the main he stated his theories like this. He said, and it's quite, one can see already that he was searching after something which is real. He said, in the main, his idea persisted that illusion is the disturbance of the natural harmony, that illness is the disturbance of the natural harmony of the human organism, and that the individual has the inherent tendency to expel all sickness from the body. The goal of the magnetopath was to strengthen the inner defenses of the organism. Sometimes the treatment seemingly intensified the symptoms, but the aim of the process was to push the malady into its most violent manifestations, to bringing to the head, as it were, to a crisis. So he was really feeling that there is a natural harmony in being, and that illness was just a disorder in that natural harmony. See, that reminds me of a recent lecture of Professor Joris, who is the professor of a clinic in Hamburg, of the university clinic in Hamburg, who stated that illness is always only when man falls out of order. That man gets sick if he falls out of order. I think that very true. We see that in the moment that we fall out of the order of the world, that we are disordered. And Mesmer somehow felt something in that line. But what was his method? Well, he just tried out what he could try out. His method was like this. He said, magnets were used to stroke the affected parts of the ailing body on the theory of imparting vitality where needed. Again, on the alternate theory of drawing out the offending agent of sickness through the unexplained magnetic attraction. Then it was tried to combine two or more magnets, placing them in positions which facilitate and reinforce their power. Well, what was the effect on the patients? The effect were always described that the patient said that he felt a strong sensation. Then he was falling into a sort of convulsion or crisis. Then usually the patient passed into a sleep-like trance, and usually when he woke, he was improved or healed. And that happened not only in one or two cases, but in hundreds and hundreds of cases within a short time. They report that Mesmer achieved at first amazing results, that only a few did not get healed, and that he healed blinds and paralyzed people and all sorts of so-called incurable diseases. So that was the situation, and I can quite imagine that man, that he was amazed at what he has found, that he was trying to find a reason for it and an explanation for it. And I can quite imagine that he wanted the professional medical men, the medical academy, to acknowledge or to investigate what he had found. Because he thought, really, that he had found the essence of life, that he had found the great life principle of the universe, that he had found a force of the universe which would set aright everything that has got out of control or out of order. And the first acknowledgement which he received from the learned circles was from the Academy of Science in Bavaria, who said, Dr. Mesmer has discovered one of nature's mysterious motive energies. So here is Mesmer seeing all his results and trying to find out what is really happening, the signs of it, the reason for it. But he soon found out that he could vary his methods without impairing the results. For instance, he very soon found out what he said, that he soon realized that patients could only be cured if they were willing to cooperate. So, you see, already comes in something of a more psychological nature. First he thought it was a force of nature, quite objective, in an independent, self-existing force, and now he already began to see that this force would act more better if he had the collaboration from the side of the patient. The methods that then developed got him naturally then into misrepresentation. In one report it is stated, he noted that his more susceptible patients were frequently thrown into cataleptic fits by contact with objects other than the magnets. And it occurred to him that the magnetic force might be transferred to substances unlike iron and cobalt. Acting on his assumption, he treated various things like trees in the garden, the playing fountain of Italian marble, pocket amulets, water for drinking. But what began as a sheer speculation became for him solid conviction when put to the test, because it worked. So these reports state how masses of people just came into his wonderful villa which he had now, and to that garden, that water pool, and if they just touched the trees and drank from the water in the water pool, they got healed. Naturally, one can imagine that this stirred up a lot in Vienna. And very soon, Mesmer had to face a very grave situation. And this came about with a quite unique case of healing which he had. There was on the court of the Empress Maria Theresia a secretary, I think he was a secretary, who had a blind child. And that child was blind since the age of 3 or 4. And that child was playing the piano quite marvelously. And so was something very unique that the blind child could play the piano so wonderfully. And that child got an annual reward or pension or what you would call from the Empress. And then one day, the court physician couldn't help that child, and then one day this child got in contact with Mesmer. And Mesmer took her in her clinic, and after some days, a few weeks, that child saw again. and was healed. She could see everything and was healed. It seemed that she was healed. And then, that's quite interesting to see, because all these things have so many parallels with every age and with everything that happens in every century and in every era. Then scholasticism and theology went hand in hand to knock Mesmer out of his business. The father saw that he would lose his income, because the child, no more being blind, wouldn't get that annual pension anymore, and got afraid of his good income, which the child brought in through the performances. The court physician was very cross because Mesmer could heal the child and he couldn't heal it. And so they combined with Cardinal Migazzi, who was in Vienna, and brought the whole question of theology into the healing, that it isn't right to heal somebody who has been struck by God to be blind, and all that. And they just worked on that poor child until she fell blind again, became blind again, and was blind all her life again. Naturally, Mesmer, who wasn't aware really of what was going on, had a bad shock, and it seemed that his enemies had the proof in their hand that his theory and his method of treating his patients were not right, and the police ordered him to leave Vienna within 48 hours, and he had to go. And that was the end of the story in Vienna. You see how here was a man who went along a new line. He was feeling something. He didn't know it exactly, but how then every thing was mobilized to hinder any solid investigation into what he was doing. So he went to Paris. He came to Paris. I just want to show you that, because to show that Mesmer was a very successful man. He really got all the emperors and kings and medical people and the university going in that age. He wasn't just a nowhere and a nobody. He went to Paris, he opened a clinic there, and within a few months he had so many patients, got so wealthy that he could open a bigger clinic, and he had more patients and more to do than ever before. Well, that naturally raised a lot of jealousy, but also got the support of Maria Antoinette in Paris, and she gave him a big hospital in which to work. You see, he was quite a man, and there he operated for another 2 or 3 years. And while he was there, he naturally made quite a few new observations. For instance, he made the observation that people were healed without that Dr. Mesmer employed a magnetically charged object. You see, now he got already away from the magnet, and he could see that if he uses the magnet or not, that he could heal them just the same. So that got him thinking again. And so he thought that something about his personality and personal presence brings the cure. And he thought that a neighboring human body might be benefited through an aura, through an aura or radiation, a transference of some sort of substance or energy from one person to another. So he made now the step away from the magnets, and so called it no more just magnetism, but animal magnetism. Because he could see that that force was not something which is dependent on an iron or a cobalt magnet, but something which was dependent on a force with which he had in his human body. And so he began to treat his patient just with laying on of the hands, as he called it, and that he noticed that it became far more effective than before, that the direct physical contact was found to be as unnecessary as the use of a magnet, iron bars, and the system of passes made by the hands towards and around his patient became the order of the day. So you see how we always get a little step further away from the material force and always more and more really to the animal magnetism, to the organic magnetism. So they state that this attenuation of matter intensified the mental reactions, speeding up the crisis and facilitating the cures. So that was the method which Mesmer employed in Paris, where he was very successful, earned a lot of money, but he wasn't satisfied with that, with having a lot of patients, a lot of money. He always strived to be acknowledged by the faculty. His heart was somewhere else than to make money and just to heal people. His heart was there, where he thought, I have found something which must be investigated and which science must get hold of and must investigate and expand. And so he constantly tried in many ways to get the medical faculty interested in him. But they didn't take any notice. There was a lot of jealousy around it. And so Mesmer said goodbye to Paris. And when he wanted to say goodbye to Paris, that gave such a stir in Paris, they didn't want to let him go. And Marie Antoinette offered him 40,000 livres a year as a bribe if he would stay. But he didn't. He went. He went and went to Belgium, to Spa, to think about the whole thing. He was a bit disappointed that the medical faculty didn't want to investigate what he was doing. But soon afterwards, he came back and he succeeded that Louis XVI ordered the medical faculty of Paris to investigate his findings. And the commission that was set up was quite a queer commission. There was Franklin in it, who is a well-known person on the electrical side. Then Lavoisier, who perhaps you know as a very big man in chemistry, and then Dr. Guillotin, who was the man who invented the guillotine for the French Revolution. And they really guillotined Mesmer's theory in every way they could. They didn't really investigate. They tried to boycott everything. They were skeptic and so on. And so the report that really came out was not what Mesmer hoped they would do. But just the same, the report was stating some quite astonishing facts. They say, for instance, the effects of the magnetic manipulations are the most amazing of spectacles. They were quite amazed when they came into the clinic and observed what they saw.